Hello everybody and welcome to Bookcast 78. Today I'm joined by Stephen, aka Ninja Catfish.
Hello.
And Daniel, aka Flame Condor.
Hey.
What we'll do is, we don't have much news today, but we'll try and get through it as quickly as we can, so we'll jump straight into it. Nintendo have announced in a very, very impromptu...
When aren't they impromptu?
Yeah, but this one was done on the same day, like in the same hour as it was happening.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I don't think they've ever done that before, but I'm not sure. All they did basically was they announced that there's a new Chibi Robo game, which is actually out now on the Japanese eShop. It's basically Chibi Robo, except uses the AR camera, and is there an add-on for it, or is it a little box, or...
What do you mean?
Have you guys seen that there's a screenshot with like a white... Oh, it's a Wii U, sorry.
Yeah, there's a limited edition Wii U coming out for it. I'm not sure how
that's
that'll
so
work.
Strange.
From what I'm aware, it is like a full Chibi Robo game. It's download only, but the hook in this one is unique. You can scan real world items into it as long as they match up the shape that it's looking for or something.
Right. Game.
It sort of freed people off because I think everyone saw the trailer and thought it was just some AR game, but reading some opinions of it on GAF, it seems to be like a full sort of platforming Chibi Robo game.
Is it the 3DS only?
Yes, I believe so.
So it's a special edition Wii U for a 3DS game?
Yeah, yes. I try not to think about it either.
It's interesting. I mean, I never played a Chibi Robo game, so I don't understand the appeal. I'm assuming they're big in Japan.
I've played number two, the first DS one. It wasn't bad. I want to track down the GameCube one, but it seems to be pretty hard to find a PAL copy of it online for a decent price.
So it did come out overseas?
Yeah, it came out.
Yeah. I definitely remember it coming out and kind of got a lot of coverage in the local magazines, but there were never copies anywhere.
Chibi Robo Park Patrol was like limited release in America to Walmart, but I mean, I saw it at JB Hi-Fi when it came out here. The third one didn't come out of Japan, though, which is a shame, because apparently it was much better than the first two.
And they're just, like, platformers, or...?
The whole thing about Chibi Robo is, you know, this little, like, helper robot, and you just sort of go around the house doing chores, helping clean and do random little odd jobs and all that. The next park patrol, you're actually in a park trying to fix it up and make it better, and they're really hard games to explain simply.
Right.
Given how much trouble I have explaining simple games, I'm not going to try and explain it because I'll probably bore everyone to tears. But number two is worth tracking down if you find it. I think it was like $15 for me.
Right. Well, this one is called Chibi Robo Photography. It's out now in Japan on the Japanese eShop. I'm not 100% sure if we will see it here. I think we might, but I mean, because it's eShop only, I would think that there might be a way for them to bring it here without spending too much money. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. So moving in the same Nintendo Direct, Nintendo also announced that Demper Men 3 is coming out for the Nintendo eShop. It doesn't have a date yet. I'm sure it will come out, in Australia and other, like, non-Japanese regions because, you know, the first two came out here too.
They were so popular as well.
I assume that they're selling for some reason.
I'll tell you what, I got Demper Men 2 in it, as we know, last episode talked about it, bored people to sleep. It has Street Pass feature. Since the last episode on the Vodcast, I went to Supernova in Perth, and I got 200 Street Passes. Do you want to know how many I got for Demper Men 2?
Zero?
Yep. Clearly.
That popular game.
Yep. That was kind of funny. Got heaps of freaky forms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm getting confused with that other terrible... what was that other game that I can't remember?
Freaky Forms? The one where you
make... The one where you make animals out of shapes?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It was like an early eShop game, so I think a lot of people picked it up through that. And it's kind of fun to street pass with it because you get other people's formies coming to your town.
Talk about what's new about Demper Men
3. I watched the trailer and I actually... Because Google... It was on YouTube and YouTube's got the feature where you can... have translations, like subtitles of what the guy's saying, and I don't know if they work really well, because it was all over the place. I don't really know what's new about it, or I didn't sort of... Yeah, I honestly do
it
not
It just
know.
Looks... Oh, okay, so...
Yeah,
it is coming.
Like, it looks like it's got rooms that you can actually... Instead of just customizing your dampers, you've got rooms you can customize now. There are a whole lot of...
Like
other
little Animal Crossing.
Crossing the damper, man.
Yeah, yeah.
They can move out of my village.
I'm just trying to see if I can find any more info on it.
It's, well, I mean, I'm assuming these games are doing well, if they've made three. Who makes them?
Genius Sorority, I think is how you say it.
Sonority.
Sonority.
Oh, wow, Sonority, yeah.
They made the Pokemon Colosseum games.
Colosseum.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really know what's different. It looks sort of the same.
But we know it's coming, we don't have a date yet, but we're sure it's going to come out in Australia at some point. How much were they generally, Flame?
About 1,000 yen.
Oh, no. How much did you buy them for?
In people money.
$10.
$10. So, yeah. So, I mean, there's a 50% off sale that's going to be happening in the middle of July in Japan. I would be interested to see if they'll bring it here. Because, I mean, honestly...
Well, Devilman 1 went on sale before Devilman 2 came out, so I imagine they'll do the same.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would buy them for $5, so I wouldn't mind if that happened, but I guess we'll have to see what happens. We'll move on. We'll move on to the next piece of news. Probably the biggest piece of news for this podcast, which, I mean, doesn't really say much about the news, is that Nintendo have announced at the Japan Expo, which was in Paris this week, which confuses me, but whatever, is that there's going to be a new sword Pokemon. It's going to be steel type and ghost type, I believe. And what's its English name is On Edge.
Like, I'm not sure if On Edge or Hon Edge.
I thought it was like H-O-N like honor, but then.
Maybe it's H-O-M like homage. Maybe it's both.
Yeah. Well, its Japanese name is, oh no, its French name is Monopale, so.
Well, it's a sword.
Its name is On Edge, sorry.
Yeah.
We don't know how to pronounce it though, so I'm not really 100% sure.
Definitely better than a ice cream.
Do you know what? Like, a lot of people are complaining about this, though, because, you know, it's an inanimate object, and, like...
Rubbish!
People
yeah,
seem...
Yeah, so was a rubbish bag.
Yeah, like, do you guys care that there are inanimate objects becoming Pokemon now? I mean,
I... Ghost, it's a ghost type, right?
Yeah, it's a steel ghost sword. Yeah, I mean...
Being a ghost thing, it's better, it's a possessed sword of honor something, which is, as Flame said, better than a... rubbish bag that talks.
Or a fridge.
Or a lawnmower. An ice cream.
Well, no,
hang
on. Okay, that was Rotom, though. I mean, he was, like, inhabiting electrical devices. That kind of makes sense. And I think that's the same here. It's a ghost that's inhabiting a sword.
Yeah. I mean...
I've given up figuring out how Pokemon work. They just make a new one. It looks different. As long as it's
There's not enough real animals to make into Pokemon.
I mean, as long as it's not the Digimon effect of taking an animal and sticking guns on it, I'm happy.
I mean, I love Pokemon, but I'm not passionate enough to get angry about them including a sword instead of another creature or something. I'm sure... I mean, I would hope that at this point they've kind of exhausted all their animal options if that's what people are really angry about.
I'm waiting for a tree kangaroo, damn it.
A tree kangaroo.
Yes, or a platypus Pokemon. They haven't had one of them yet.
Yeah, that's... Echidna's
a duck.
He's not a platypus, he's a duck.
Yeah.
He looks awfully... Oh, whatever.
he doesn't have a beaver tail thingy.
Oh, you're a beaver tail thingy.
Anyway.
Yeah,
a lot of people are talking about, like, whether or not it would have a backstory or not. I think it would be kind of cool if somehow they made it, like, it's Link's sword or something, but that would...
have to go to the Temple of Time... Pokemon land
yeah.
And pull it out and suddenly you're an old man and you shouldn't be allowed to like Pokemon anymore because you're 30.
Why does the Pokemon need a backstory all of a sudden?
Well, all Pokemon have backstories.
Do they?
It could be the new Cubone.
That's like the, that's...
Cubone's
that's
depressing.
What... Yeah, Cubone's wearing the skull of its mother or something. Is that
okay,
not...
Okay, then what's the backstory?
And maybe there's another Pokemon that wields this Pokemon as its protecting weapon.
What's the backstory of Diglett?
Well, read its Pokedex entry. That's its backstory.
Oh, it once belonged to humans, not a Pokemon. Soz.
Who? Oh, the sword. It's...
Yeah.
Oh, right. I wonder if it will evolve into, like, a set of armor or something.
It'll evolve into a double-edged sword.
What? Actually, a suit of armor would be cool.
Yeah, that's what I think, like, a possessed suit of armor or something. People reckon it's going to evolve into a gun, but I'm pretty sure Nintendo would never put a gun.
Pokemon.
Does Mr. Mime have a backstory that involves him just being a creepy guy who hides out with a mask and freaks Pokemon trainers.
I'm sure.
I think that's pretty much his Pokedex entry.
Yeah, it does. Every single Pokemon has a back like a Pokedex entry. I don't understand how you didn't know this. Well, there's a sword Pokemon, and it's coming.
It's a ghost.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much more that we can say about this, so I guess we'll just move on. Like,
we've done a good job of stretching that out.
Yeah, like, I didn't know we could talk about it for that long. The Pokemon Company has issued a statement regarding Pokemon cheaters. Basically, I mean, I've seen this all over Facebook. I haven't actually seen it anywhere else. There's been a lot of advertisements for apps I don't know how they work. I haven't looked into it. But basically, they allow you to download hacked Pokemon to your game save. And it's basically cheating, because you can get a Pokemon with all kinds of crazy stats that they're not meant to have.
Yeah, from what I understand, I think it sort of emulates a DS on the worldwide trading system and can just like make a Pokemon, put it up for trade, and you can just grab it.
Man, like, so, even though that's such a bad thing, it's so smart of them.
I know, right? It's actually pretty ingenious.
Yeah,
don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been one of those people who play Pokemon, like, not, I won't say seriously, but, you know, on a tournament kind of basis. So, I mean, I'm of the opinion, like, if it really annoys you so much, don't use it. But, I mean, and I'm pretty sure if you enter your Pokemon into a tournament or something, they're all checked first, aren't they? Or is that not true?
They did do a check that one time that I went to one. I don't know what they actually check, but yeah, they do some sort of cursory check to make you scared.
Yeah. I mean, the Pokemon Company, who are the guys who make it, have just issued a statement basically saying,
cheating bad, don't do it.
Yeah, and like, you know, they could ruin your game, and if they're discovered at events, you will be disqualified. So, I mean, it's interesting that they've acknowledged it. I've never thought of Nintendo or its subsidiaries to be the kind of people who would acknowledge something like this and comment on it.
It must be pretty big if they're getting to comment on it.
I mean, as I said, all over Facebook, like, I've been in the ads and stuff, so I think that they're trying to, I mean, does the app even cost anything? I don't know.
I haven't looked at it, I assume.
Yeah.
It would.
So yeah, I mean, it's a bad thing, and I mean, I guess Nintendo, they'll implement something.
Don't cheat Pokemon, cheating's bad.
Okay. I'm more interested to see if they implement something in X and Y to counteract this kind of stuff.
Always online.
Even
checking Pokemon DRM.
Every 24 hours. yes. But
scan your Pokemon.
But even then, I think maybe them not allowing you to carry Pokemon over from the DS versions might be an indicator that they might be using that to curb the cheating, but at least they've acknowledged it, I guess, and we'll see how it plays out. Then moving on to something else to do with Mario Kart. Team have discussed the game, and they've also cited F-Zero as an influence. Yeah.
Called it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure everyone called it, so I don't want to really brag about us calling it.
Okay.
No. It was us. No one else did. It was just us. Only us.
Hideki Kono, I think his name is, and Kazuki Yabuki. Really cool name. It rhymes. Recently answered a few questions about Mario Kart in an interview. I think it's with IGN. No, it's with someone called Game Cult. It's a French site. Basically, they're nothing like super amazing came out of the interview. They just said that the anti-gravity segments were invented as a way to keep the series fresh, but they were inspired by F-Zero and Super Mario Galaxy. As per with most people that seem to talk about F-Zero, they've also talked about them looking into a new installment of the game, but they're not giving definitive answers, which I'm sure you guys would both be happy about.
They don't need to make a new one. They just need to make a HD version of the last one. No, I just want a HD version of GX. That'll do me.
The other thing they talked about was, like, you know, they were going to put Goomba in the game, apparently, but since he has no...
Oh my god, that would be awesome!
But he has no hands, so... They're never...
He drives my head button.
In Double Dash, when they lose, they start crying and don't touch the steering wheel and they drive around. So Goomba can do what he wants.
So yeah, Goomba won't be a character for that reason. He has no hands.
He could drive with his teeth. How great would
yes!
that be?
Yes!
Well, I didn't realise there was so much, you know, interest in Goomba as a character.
It's his time to shine. 2014 year of Goomba.
They also talked about that 3DS and Wii U connectivity. They said, I'm not 100% sure if this is a bad translation or not. They said it's being looked into for next time. I don't know what that means. That must mean the next game after Mario Kart 8.
Maybe the next 3DS Mario Kart if they do one.
Oh, true. They could put the hooks into Mario Kart 8 if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean.
That said, yeah, I don't think they do more than one Mario Kart a system generally, but anyway.
Yeah, that's very, I'm not 100% sure about the translation on that. I guess it's nice that Nintendo are still acknowledging F-Zero. I mean, I've never been a fan, but I know so many people are, so...
You're dead to me.
Many people are.
Okay, so we know it's been a really short news segment, but we'll take a really short break and we'll come back with Games Play. So, we've got two games to talk about this week, so we'll try and get through them as quickly as possible, as per with the news. The first one we'll talk about is Game of Wario, which is on Wii U. Came out last week, as of recording time, but I think I'm the only person who's played it, out of all three of us. But I have played it to completion, like, not completion, but at least 18 to 20 hours, so I've got a lot of experience with it. Keep in mind that even though I have been playing it for 18 to 20 hours, you know, it's one of those games where you definitely couldn't play it with the same people for 18 to 20 hours. I played it with a lot of, like, probably about three different groups of friends and family. It's a party game. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think if you guys look at the reviews and stuff, people are very down on it. And I think that's fair enough because, you know, it's very easy to play through the games once each, you know, which is no more than 5 hours of gameplay and then just, you know, write out a review for it. But I think those people might be selling it short a little bit.
Is it similar in sort of structure to, like, WarioWare Smooth Moves, or is it a different site,
no.
Different type of game?
No.
Okay, so
I'm very
honest.
Depressed about that. That's probably my biggest disappointment, but I should have known because it wasn't named WarioWare. I don't know. I know that sounds ridiculous, yeah. But, like, you kind of should realize that, but, it's basically, like, it's very obvious that it was a pack-in game, and I talk about this in my review, but, like, it's one of those, you don't need anything else besides the gamepad. Like, it's almost as if they knew it was going, you know, it was a pack-in. So, like, they had to assume that everyone would just be getting a gamepad at base.
It's kind of more the Wii Play, what it could have been.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. I mean, Wii Play at least was, you know, $80 and came with an extra remote. Game of Wario is $80 and doesn't come with anything.
Should come with an extra gamepad.
No, I'm not gonna expect that. Like, it's a good, like, I just, like, it, you pick your games and stuff. It's like a mini game series. Each mini game has different levels and different difficulties, and each difficulty level introduces new stuff, which is really cool. So there's a little bit of depth to it too. The multiplayer is probably the most interesting because they've really have to try and work out ways to make it multiplayer using just one screen.
Does the multiplayer have any sort of structure to it? Like, everyone takes turns?
It's
or,
basically, like, you pick, like, there's a certain, out of the, I think there's 16 games total, about, six of them are multiplayer orientated. So you pick games to play if you want to play multiplayer. The obvious ones, like bowling. Pictionary is actually quite fun. Like, it doesn't sound really fun, but it is. It's, you know, one person's drawing, and when the person gets it right, who's guessing, who doesn't have a gamepad, by the way, you just click, like, you know, yes, correct, or whatever, so it moves you to the next picture, so, like, you can play two-player. Oh,
that actually sounds kind
of... And in a room of four people, where, like, you're all going crazy to guess and shit, it gets quite fun. But then you kind of have to question how much of this fun is from the Wii U. There's other games, like, you know, there's one called Fruit, where you control a little person in a big crowd of people, and he has to pick up four pieces of fruit from this crowded, like, intersection in the city, and the person who's playing, who's, like, watching without the gamepad, they have to watch the screen and see if they can work out who it is based on your movement and stuff. So it's kind of like, it feels like a natural kind of evolution from that Luigi's Mansion thing in Nintendo Land, where you had one person seeing something on one screen and one person seeing another on the other screen.
It sounds like it's got a lot of that asymmetrical, you know, one person's got this advantage, the other person has a different advantage, and they kind of go against each other without being
confused. Yeah, I mean, it's really, like, as I said, it's quite good, but I really do question whether it's worth $80 or not. That's just the biggest thing that just keeps, like, it's hanging over my judgment of the game. Like, I just don't know if it really is justified to offer a game like that for $80.
Yeah, it really stings that it was a pack-in, like...
But it's...
If it wasn't a pack-in, it might, you know, it still doesn't sound like it's, you know, worth $80, but the fact that it was makes it
really
sting.
It's kind of obvious that it was, because, as I said, you know, there's no use of Wii remotes, there's no use of any other controller besides the gamepad. Like, it's good, like, I really like it, but I just think it's way too expensive for what it is. There's another, actually, I just quickly remembered another mini game that they do for the multiplayer is you know, you both hold the gamepad together, like on one end and the other. And think of it as like a Guitar Hero setup. You send notes with your fingers, with your thumbs, while you're holding one end of the gamepad to the other side of the gamepad to your friend who's holding the gamepad. And they have to play against you. So like you can try and tap as fast as you can. And that's quite fun. But at the same time, the Wii U touchscreen is just not that responsive. Like it's, and if you put both fingers on the screen at once, the game purposely penalizes you.
Gonna say it wouldn't work because
but somehow the game knows when you do that. It penalizes you. And you know, it's a rhythm game that gets really fast paced. So there's so many times when you might accidentally press two things at once. You don't realize it. You know what I mean? To the team's credit, they tried their best to try.
It was Intelligent Systems.
Yeah.
Right?
The guys who did the originals.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And also Advance Wars and Fire Emblem. Wow. Okay.
With help from Nintendo, I believe. I mean, if you like WarioWare, there is one of the mini games is called Gamer, and you play as, I think it's 8-volt or 9-volt his name is.
Yeah, 9-volt. Yeah, I think
it's 9-volt. And you know, you're playing the game on your gamepad, and the game is set up as if, like, you're playing the game that 9-volt is playing. And you know, it's basically micro games like WarioWare, which is quite cool, because that mode essentially mirrors the screen, so you can play that off screen if you want to. And so you've got a HD version of a small WarioWare game included in that gamer mini game, which I guess is a nice throwback to the fans. But when you're playing as 9-volt, for example, you've got to make sure you watch your second screen, which is the TV, to see if his mum's coming, because he's actually staying up playing his game and he's not meant to be awake. So you'll hear footsteps down the hallway and you know his mum's coming, so you've got to hide under the bed. But then if you hide under the bed for too long, you'll fall asleep and that's when you get game over. So like,
man, this is like my childhood video game.
But, like, fantastic. Because it's a Japanese WarioWare-inspired game, you know, your mum doesn't just come down the hallway. Sometimes she'll be outside in the dark and she'll open the window and scream. Or, like, sometimes, you know, your TV will...
What? That's kind of creepy.
Or sometimes your TV will flicker and she'll jump out of the TV, like, in The Ring. It's very, Jesus. It's quite... Like, it's really scary, but it's quite well done. Like, it does get quite tense. If you don't want to play that way, you can also unlock 18-volt, I think his name is, and he doesn't have a mum. Well, he's older, so, yeah, so he doesn't have to worry about that. So you can just play it uninterrupted if you really want to, which is cool.
By the sounds of it, they should have just broken these...
So that's like the adult me.
Yeah, pretty much.
By the sounds of it, they should have just broken these up and sold them on the eShop.
They probably... Do you know what, though? There'd be so many you just wouldn't bother with. Like, I mean, when I played them all, they were like, this is nice as a package, but I don't know if I'd buy them...
How much was it all up?
It's $80 here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat as you as from what you're describing. It sounds like it's actually really good fun, but not $80 of fun. Like, that's a high-priced AAA title, but not a minigame compilation. Like, yeah, I think they did a big misstep with the price.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing, just like the last thing I'll say about it is, you know, even though there's a lot of single-player games, it's quite a fun game to watch someone play. I know it sounds weird, but... Like, I was playing it a lot, but then for the single player, I'd let my friends play it because, you know, I own the Wii U, so I didn't want to, like, be a hog.
Come over to my house and watch
this. So, like, and even watching them, it was quite interesting and stuff. But that's mainly because it's weird and zany. But then you also, like, the other thing is you also wonder, like, you know, this really isn't anything super new since Nintendo Land. Like, why wouldn't they just roll this into Nintendo Land and then add more recognisable characters to it to help it sell at least? But, I mean, yeah, that's really all I have to say about it, because, I mean, we all haven't played it, so we can't really talk about it too much longer. It's good, but the price is just a little bit too high at the moment. I would say wait for a price drop, but I've got a feeling this won't be distributed for too long, so by the time the price drop comes around, there probably won't be any copies left, but I guess we'll see.
You can buy it from the eShop, right? Might wait for a sale to happen on there. They have done that.
For Nintendo games?
Yeah, some of that meant stuff like Dylan's Rolling Western and whatnot get price drops from time to time, but no, I'm not sure about the full retail games.
Well, it's good, but I'm not sure if $80 good. So we'll move on to the second game, which we've all played, which came out only a few days ago, Project Cross Zone.
Project Cross Zone!
There we go. It's very fan service-y. It's,
Japanese?
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Oh, it is fan service.
It's
game.
Very, that's the thing I think that I really wanted to speak about most was, you know, it's one of those games you can tell just by the way the characters interact and just by the way the story is written that it was, and just by the characters that were included, that it was really a game made for Japan with no expectation of them taking it outside of Japan.
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, especially the lineup of characters.
The biggest thing that made that apparent to me is it's got Valkyria Chronicles characters from the only entry that never made it outside of
Japan. Yeah, like, I mean, I like, to be perfectly honest, I know most of the characters. I know, the only ones I don't know are the ones from, like, Sakura Wars and, what's the other one? God Eater and Shining Force, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I have no idea who those people are. But
I mean, for me, like the Capcom guys, I know all of them, and then you get to the other guys, and you're like, I know of Jin and Ling from Tekken, but as not a Tekken person, I don't really know who they are. And I know of Dot Hack, because I watched the anime.
Yeah, there were a couple of characters in there, it's like, wait, I know you from somewhere, and I was just sitting on it for like half an hour, and it clicked, as, oh, it's from that video game that I'd heard of 10 years ago. And it's just kind of cool.
Actually, it's interesting, because all the Capcom characters are pretty well known. I mean, you've got Chris and Jill from Resident Evil, Dante from Devil May Cry, Ryu and Ken from Street Fighter, Chun-Li and Morrigan from Street Fighter and Darkstalkers, Mega Man, X and Zero, Frank West from Dead Rising and Shenko from Darkstalkers. So I know all the Capcom characters, I can safely say. The only Sega...
On that note, who was Dante's partner?
Dimitri from Darkstalkers.
Okay, I didn't know who that was.
Right, awkward. Well, I do. Virtua Fighter is the only Sega one I really recognize. Oh, Residents of Fate and Virtua Fighter are probably the only two characters I know from Sega.
Looking at the Namco ones, it's like, here's some characters from Tales of Vesperia, and I'm like, why are you doing that when you had, like, Tales of the Abyss on the 3DS? Wouldn't it make more sense to go with the character?
That would make no sense. No, because Yuri and Estelle are both, like, the most popular characters in the series. Vesperia is the best game in the series.
I thought Tales of the Abyss was the most well-regarded one. I mean, I've only played Abyss and Symphonia.
Oh, you're missing out. But we're sidetracking a little bit. Vesperia is the most popular, and I think it is for good reason if you play it. But I mean,
I'm just saying more from the point of view of that it's on the 3DS. Why wouldn't you go to the characters that are from the game that's on the 3DS?
Well, then why would you include Dante, Morrigan?
Yeah, I know. We're sort of getting sidetracked. I mean, as you said, it must have been made for Japanese fans. I mean, for a long time, this game wasn't even coming out of Japan.
I mean, I didn't think it ever would.
Yeah. I just know that the producer on it, who's the guy who's also the producer for Tekken, I think,
yeah.
He really wanted to get this out of Japan. So
Zephyr and Leanne, even, from Resonance of Fate. I mean, I know none of you guys probably played it, but it's probably one of the funnest RPGs I've ever played. It's like a John Woo action movie in an RPG form. It's very fun.
I thought it was interesting that they brought back Cosmos, however you say her name, from Xenosaga. Like, I thought that game had been forgotten about.
Yeah, I mean,
but evidently not.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about the game, though.
Oh, yes, let's.
Oh, I forgot there's extra characters like Trombone, Ulala from Space Channel 5. Even, like, Bruce Dellinger from Dynamite Cop, who is actually Bruce Willis from Die Hard. But it's the game itself... I mean, I don't want to be mean to the game, but if you've played the demo, you've played, like, the game.
Yeah, I got that impression. Like, it's, what I got from it was a turn-based strategy game, except the combat is a lot more in-depth. Like, instead of just watching an animation and having a rock, paper, scissors sort of Fire Emblem-style combat.
I don't know if I'd say in-depth. I'd say it's more involving.
Yes, yeah, that's probably a better word. More.
Yeah. You kind of, you know, you enter your battle and stuff, you don't just watch the animation play out. You've got to kind of, like, time your attacks to get maximum damage, like, because you can mash, and that looks cool. But then you also, if you don't time it, you'll miss a lot of attacks on your enemy because they're up in the air or they're, like, you know, on the other side of the screen or something.
You've got to try and juggle them.
Yeah, so you've got to try and juggle them. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have, but because I've played it for 20 hours roughly already. If you time it perfectly with your juggles, you actually get critical hits for that next move.
Mm, yeah, I did notice that.
There is an incentive to do it.
I just press the button.
It looks so pretty, though, in battles. Like, you've got your two characters, and then if you've positioned your units right on the battlefield, you can call in another two characters to start fighting. And if you've got the right character, you can also call in a fifth character and all just be going at it at once. And it's just so incredible to watch.
Yeah, it does.
One of those super moves, and the camera's panning all over the place, and man, it's actually.
And those really, really short, like, anime cutscenes just look really good, too. It's really,
really cool.
It's fantastically presented. Like, it just looks so good. But, are you guys all playing on XLs?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just think, like, sometimes the sprites, they look a little bit, like, drawn out a little bit.
Pixely.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, pixely. I mean, I don't know if that's, like, an artistic choice, or?
I think it's very much an artistic choice, because they'll, like, keep the sprites there and zoom in and out on them, regardless of the fact that they're, you know, tiny pixel sprites. They'll zoom in on them so they take up the full screen, and, yeah, they hopefully wouldn't do that unless they really wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder what it looks like on a normal DS, is what I'm saying. Maybe on a smaller screen with a denser pixel density, it might look a bit better. But, I mean, it's such a non-issue. Like, I don't think it's bad by any means.
I just love it. Music is so nice that you'll find, you know, occasionally you'll find a character that you recognize, and then the theme will start from Street Fighter, and you'll start doing Metsaduk, and it's so good.
Oh, and that was, like, awesome. It's like Ryu and Ken show up, and it's like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's how I felt when Chris and Jill showed up in one of the levels, in the final version. I was pretty excited.
Speaking of people turning up, I think that's another thing. I mean, I just sort of breathe, like the story, and it's like, why do these people all know each other? I thought this was like, the universes were crossing over in some explanation. Like they were...
How far have you guys played?
I've played both demos. So I've not played a lot. I mean, Animal Crossing rules my life right
now. Right. So, I mean, generally speaking, the story isn't that good.
I think it's just an excuse to have everyone in the same place.
It really is. Like, it's just like, you know, the typical stuff that happens in these crossovers. Like, there's this mysterious force that's, like, making everyone, all people's worlds collide. But then also, like, you know... For example, Chun-Li knows all about Jurel from Virtua Fighter.
Of course she does.
She's like the main, she's the big boss from Virtua Fighter. Everyone knows who she is in Virtua Fighter. But Chun-Li's also heard of her through her police connections or something.
Of course.
Like, yeah, I'm like, so does like Street Fighter and Virtua Fighter or whatever exist in the same world now?
I don't think you're meant to give much thought to it. That's the...
Okay.
It is very, the story, like, honestly, the story is just terrible, but, as I say, it's a fan service game. Like, it's even an easy game to play because of the way, you know, you're just meant to experience, I guess, the set pieces and stuff. Cause all the environments as well, I don't know if you guys noticed, but are from other games as well. So far, I've played in the church from Devil May Cry. I've played in the mall from Dead Rising.
I know that in the demo, there was a graveyard from Ghosts and Goblins, and Arthur was a guest character on that map. And there was also, I might be mistaken, but one of the other demos I think played in the town that looked like it was out of Valkyria Chronicles, but don't quote me on that.
It probably could be. And even the enemies, like you fight against, what's his name in Marvel vs. Capcom? The red demon dude that flies.
Red armor.
I don't know what his English name is.
Yeah,
but
holy crap.
Like, they appear as enemies. Like, it's all very, well thought out together. So you have enemies from each franchise appearing. But the bosses seem to be unique. But the bosses are reused a lot. Like, it's such a strange game. Like, I honestly thought it would be like an RPG, but it's more of just like a battle-to-battle-to-battle-to-battle kind of game. Like, there's no exploration. There's really isn't much of an emphasis on stats. You can play it without. And it's very hard to die. I mean, I don't know if you guys had trouble.
No, I didn't even try to, like, heal dudes up and stuff, and I just kept attacking the main bosses, and they'd kill a few of my guys, but I'd still win in the end just through attrition, because I have more characters than him.
Yeah, and like you have skills and stuff. I don't know if you noticed, because you have to press a button to open the menu and look through them. But the skills, like, they're all the same thing, but they're just named differently according to the character. Chun-Li's healing move is called Police Observation or something. I don't know if that's 100% true, but you get my drift.
Yeah.
But then Frank might have the same attack that's called Photography Skills or something. Like, it's so rare that you'll need to actually use them. I mean, there's some levels later on where you have to kill something before they can escape the map, and that's when you kind of have to use skills that increase your range or whatever to get through, but those moments are so rare. The thing I like is how it kind of ties everything in together with this XP gauge, which is the most misleading name ever.
Yes, yeah, it took me so long to actually work out what that meant, but yeah.
Yeah, like it's actually cross power, it's not XP like an RPG, like I don't understand why
XP
that would do that.
XP wouldn't mean anything else, surely.
Yeah, so basically, like, you know, that gauge, you can either use some of it to block incoming attacks, fully block oncoming attacks, or counter. So like each of those uses a certain amount of the gauge, or you can do nothing and then save that gauge to use a super attack the next turn. So, I mean, I think that's the only real layer of strategy that comes into the game. Like, it really isn't hard to play. And
I don't know if it gets harder later on, but yeah, I found just myself, you know, crowding around enemies one by one, just systematically taking them out. It was fun because the battles were exciting, but I didn't feel like I was challenged any, you know, strategic.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, as I said, I was saying to you guys earlier, like, you know, it's a game that even though it's simple and it's easy to play and it's not necessarily that in depth, it's still really fun. And I think that that's really because all the characters carry the game quite a bit. And I mean, even, I don't know if you guys noticed, but like the characters talk about, they make fun of their series that they're from quite a lot.
Mm.
Even like when Frank sees a woman, he takes a photo of them and it comes up with the little like
erotic.
Great or erotic and the erotica marker, just like in Dead Rising.
Fantastic.
Yeah, like it's very, it's so, and you know, you've got other characters making fun of the other character. Like it's kind of like almost like a Stan Wars thing, where they all fight each other about which game's better and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I really, as I said, I really like it. It, the characters really do carry it quite a bit, evidently, because, you know, I've played it for 20 to 30 hours, I think.
I think it was the same way with Namco Cross Capcom, the previous one that I assume this is a follow on from. It's just an excuse to have fun and.
Well, the same characters appear. Mm.
It's also the, I mean, Monolith worked on that as well.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I think that, was that an RPG or was it more like the same thing, just battle to battle?
I think it was fairly similar. I know it was a strategy RPG, but whether it had more, I don't know if it had any exploration or, you know, any more of a intelligible story. Yeah, it's a fair while back, so I didn't play it. It's fun if you like the characters.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's good that it's so accessible. But then I also think, like, maybe the people who made this game or published this game are aware of what it is, and that's why it's a little bit cheaper. It's only $59.95 here.
$55 on the eShop as well. Oh,
so it's a little bit cheaper on the eShop too. And it's kind of perfectly suited to handheld, because, you know, you can just play one mission, save your game, pick it up whenever.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And that it's would keep it from becoming stale, because, you know, if you'd play 20 hours straight, then it would become the same thing over and over again, I can imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's, I do really like it. I find it, it's a bit annoying how repetitive it is, but I mean,
I think they did quite well timing it after Fire Emblem as well, because people have just finished that, be looking for a new strategy RPG to get into.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I just find it interesting that a lot of people were really looking forward to the, I know a lot of people were really clamoring for this to come out, and I don't really think a lot of people have picked it up. Now, I don't really hear much about it.
I think, I'm not sure if it's different in the full game, because I only played the demos, as I mentioned, but I found it a little bit intimidating to actually understand what the hell was going on. There was so many pretty things happening in bars all over the place and percentages, and I actually had to talk with someone who had the full game to kind of explain bits and pieces before it clicked. It was great fun when it did click, but I was like, how come I have to stop attacking, and how come the, you know, the D-pad icons disappear when you use it, and it didn't really explain it terribly well.
That's how I felt as well. I remember, like, I played the demo and I was like, wow, I'm so excited. Like, you know, this game that we've all wanted for so long is finally coming out here. And then I finished it and I was like, what have we done? Like,
what is this?
Yeah.
I'm a bit the same. I mean, I'm playing the full version and, I mean, only two missions in, but I've not really getting my head around it yet.
Yeah, once it clicks though, it does, like, it clicks like really well. Mm. The game does a kind of good job at explaining it to you quite well. I think the reason that maybe it's so long is the developers realize you have to play it quite a bit to understand it.
Yeah.
That's the best way to understand it, is to just keep playing it.
I think the demo was just a wall of text at the start that I just skipped because I thought I'd work it out myself.
It would. And that's the thing, like, at least in the final game, you've got a different chapter with different characters each time to guide you through each step of the game.
Mm.
Of how it plays, rather than a big wall of text in front of the demo. And it's only an hour, roughly, that it takes to get through all the tutorials. And they're not, like, mind-numbingly bad. So, I mean, I think it does that much better than the demo. And then the other thing they have as well, which is quite good, is the Crosspedia, which is basically, an encyclopedia of all the characters, so you can find out the history of all these other characters if you don't know who they are, or where they're from, or whatever, as well as what's going on in the story right now. But, you know, I honestly don't really care anymore.
We're just watching it for the pretty colours.
Not the pretty colours, the characters, really, for me. I mean, the pretty colours are a nice, you know, icing on the cake, but yeah, they do. It's a very, like I won't say superficial, but it's a very style over substance game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I think I'm not going to hold it against it, because I think that's the whole point of it.
Mm.
Maybe people disagree with me, I don't know.
I think the fact that there's two reasonably meaty demos on the store, like, if you're not sure and have no idea if you're going to like it or not, if by the time you finish those two demos, you'll probably have made up your mind as to whether you might get it one day or you just don't get it and don't care.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but then, I didn't really like the demos. It didn't grab me at all. But I bought this just to review it.
I feel bad that I can't really comment on it more, because, it is a game that interests me, but I just haven't been able to really dive into it as much as I wanted to. But from what I've played it, there is potential there, for it to be a good game.
I think maybe I was lucky to have it click while I was playing the demos, because I really want to get it now. I probably won't be able to for a while, cash-wise, but I was really, really impressed.
Yeah, I think it's so horrible for me to say this, but you could probably wait and it will drop in price.
Oh, yeah.
And it's cheap already, so, I don't think you'll have trouble finding it, and when it does drop in price, it'll probably be a little bit more worth it. The more characters that you know, the more you'll get out of it is the easiest way to summarize it. But yeah, I think it's really nice that the game actually came out here, despite being a licensing nightmare. They managed to bring it out. But at least it came out, and we got it, and it was, honestly, it was better than I expected, but yeah. It wasn't really what I expected at the same time. I thought it was going to be more proper RPG, but it's just really the battles. But I guess that's the best part of an RPG.
As I said, it's by Monolith Soft, so if you're a fan of them, worth checking out.
But yeah, so I guess we've talked about games played for quite a while now. Okay, so we'll come back with our hot topic, which is going to be basically regarding Rage at Lock for Nintendo console. Since it seems to be such a hot and contentious issue across a lot of communities at the moment, especially since Sony and Microsoft are both releasing region-free consoles this generation, whereas Nintendo have still got a region-locked home console and a region-locked portable console, which makes no sense to me. I guess, there's a huge, I wouldn't say huge quite yet, there's a movement online at the moment. I think the petition itself has about 20,000 supporters
I think it's about 10,000.
One up that's 20,000. I hope it's the same one. No, this is the same one. About 20,000.
Wow. Well, it was 10,000 when we wrote the piece, and now it's 20,000.
Oh, okay. So that's pretty good. Basically, this was sparked by Microsoft taking region locking away from their Xbox One, which is probably one of the best things they could have done. But the gist of it is, I thought ages ago Nintendo, someone from Nintendo said that the whole point of, for example, a Game Boy game was that you could take it with you anywhere, buy a game anywhere, and it would work. Yeah. Wasn't that their whole thing before?
That was one of the best parts of the DS, is that every game you could play on any console regardless, and it's just so weird that they didn't keep it the same for the 3DS.
I didn't need to worry about Jump Ultimate Stars being Japanese only.
Yeah, it's such a bizarre thing. I don't understand why they changed their mind so quickly, and to be perfectly honest with you, it hasn't, none of this has really affected me yet. I'm not one of those people who thinks it's, anti-consumer and taking away my rights. I'm not that angry or passionate about it, but I know there are other people who are. Fair enough, I guess.
But it is very annoying.
Like me,
I know it's annoying, but, that's the thing. As I said, it hasn't affected me yet, so, I haven't had an opportunity to be, or a necessity in myself to be passionate about it. I think Nintendo are trying a little bit harder with worldwide stuff. I think Pokemon coming out everywhere in the world at the same time in October, for example, is quite a big thing for them. But, it's still quite strange that, I do think it's, especially their handhelds, why region lock them? It just doesn't.
So weird that if I were to go on a holiday to America, I wouldn't be able to buy any games there, except if I did it on the eShop. Maybe that's their ulterior motive.
Yeah, the other thing that I thought was strange was,
that was a joke, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Just in case. Thanks.
I think at the same time, in Nintendo's defense, if we could just import anything from anywhere, would Nintendo Australia, even exist? I would think that everyone would find a way, even retailers would find a way to circumvent more expensive Australian stock.
Well, they definitely did, didn't they?
As we've seen in the past, Yeah, they did. We caught him out on like importing stuff like Henry Hatsworth and a few other games that they were just getting American copies of because it was just
I don't want to like protect Nintendo Australia 100%, you know, but like, I mean, I know that they're quite small compared to say, I mean, Nintendo America or Nintendo Europe. Mm. So like, I mean, those positions would be lost, I think, over time if region free were a thing. So that's, I mean, I'm not saying that's a good thing. Like, I'm not saying that region locking shouldn't exist because of this, but I'm just like showing both sides of the argument.
Mm.
Especially
mentioned sort of that retailers were, you know, getting around the region lock and as such getting cheaper prices. I wonder if that's another part of it as well. Like, if, you know, if everyone's going to go buy stuff for the equivalent US price or, you know, wherever's cheapest in the world, then how will Nintendo justify the prices that they sell stuff at now? Like,
there's sort of a bit of a similar situation to that. You may have, Stephen, I'm not sure about James, but I mean, has everyone here heard of, like, Games Workshop and Warhammer?
I've heard of it, but...
Okay, what happens with it is, I mean, because it is a worldwide company and it's the same models released worldwide, and then they get situations where, because of the flux in currencies, people will start importing from one region. Like, if it's cheaper for us to buy models from the UK, people will buy models from there. But then they pick up on that happening, so they'll put their prices up in UK. So then the people in the UK start importing from Australia because it's cheaper, and then they'll put the prices up in Australia. So it's not like just talking to buy where it's cheaper. Stuff like that does happen in some mediums. Like they will put their prices up in one region to stop people importing from them, but then it has a flow-on effect.
I mean, I know what you mean. Like, you know, people will still buy from other places where it's cheaper. Mm. That's what a market is. Like, that's the basics of economics.
Yeah. I think, like, on the Warhammer topic, like, Warhammer stuff is so expensive that, you know, people who are into that are going to be the ones that are looking for any way to get it cheaper, whereas I suspect the DS and 3DS market are going to be a little bit less discerning in that way. Like, you'll have a lot of, you know, people that just won't, you know, might not have a credit card, so they can't buy stuff overseas.
I would like to know how much of an issue this has ever been. I mean, as you said, up until the 3DS, no Nintendo system has been region locked. And in fact, there have only ever been two other systems in the world that have been region locked, handheld systems that have been region locked. One was the N-Gage, and the other was the Turbo Express. Every other handheld system has been region free.
Yeah, so I mean, have Nintendo spoken about it at all? Have they?
I don't think so.
Well, recently, IGN did an interview with him, and no, this was done before the whole Xbox One 180 thing. Iwata said, from some people's perspective, it might seem like a kind of restriction. However, we hope people can appreciate the fact that we're selling our products worldwide. There are many different regions around the world, and each region has its own cultural acceptance and legal restrictions, as well as different age ratings. There are always things that we're required to do in each different region, which may go counter to the idea that players around the world want the freedom to play whatever they want. I hope that game fans can understand that the industry isn't doing this solely out of business ego. There are some reasons behind it.
To me, it sounds like he's, you know, if we're looking at an Australian point of view, that sounds like he would be blaming, you know, our rating system, but I don't think Nintendo has any games that would have any concern with the Australian's rating system.
Well, the German rating system's also a lot worse.
Yeah,
than
there
ours.
Is that.
But, like...
It just seems like
a weird excuse.
Basically, I think his excuse boils down to, you know, every rating system is different, so we have to create a special region, because you know how they have parental controls in each thing, in each console and stuff, so they're probably like, oh, you know, we have to create a version of the game with different parental controls for each grading system, which is like fair enough to some extent, but like, I mean, you see, like, you know, I know Microsoft is bigger than Nintendo, but you know, they will put out a disc for a game which has parental controls for all the rating systems. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
I mean, I don't know exactly how theirs works, but I mean, an M15, other places will have a PEGI 18 or whatever, but they'll kind of work out an equivalent and it'll just kind of work.
Even they could, if they really wanted to, you know, they could do it, they should do it like console side, so it's all in the software itself, and then you just chuck like, say, six different, you know, 1 kilobyte unlock files or something that each say what rating it is, so the console checks for that file, and then it's not like it, you know, takes up lots of resources, and then every single person can play the game at the same time.
And I guess even if games, say, haven't been rated in Australia, they'll have a general idea and they can put their best guess in until it does get rated in Australia and then just issue a Dash update.
I mean, the whole region locking for the 3DS, I mean, that was the sole reason I got a US 3DS was because Australia traditionally doesn't get... we do miss out on some of the more niche titles. I'm surprised we got Project Cross Zone. And, I mean, the type of games I like are stuff like JRPGs and the more niche titles. When it was announced that the 3DS was going to be region-locked, I decided getting a US one would be better, just because I could pretty much guarantee I'd have access to all of the games I wanted to, and I wouldn't be denied certain games just based on purely
where I was the same with the Wii. I mean, I don't know if you guys know, but my Wii was US. I bought my Wii when, can't remember. I think when it came out. But I imported my Wii because I remember with the GameCube, things have changed now. It's less worse than it used to be. But, you know, games with like Super Smash Bros. Melee, I think there was like a 3-month gap or something.
Didn't we get that launched down here?
Are you thinking of Brawl? That was like a 6-month gap.
Oh, Brawl. But there was definitely a gap for Melee. I'm not on crack. Like, I remember waiting for so long.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't think I was up with the news at that point.
I was anyway. But, like, there were so many games that I knew. Like, Resident Evil 4, I remember I had to wait a while for that until, you know, the freeloader came out. That was, like, the swap and play region free makeup.
Oh, okay, here we go. Smash Brothers Melee, December 3rd for America. Australia?
Yeah, see, I told you, there was a huge gap. And that's what really turned me off. Like, that's why I bought a US one, because then, you know, I'd have to wait.
That said, the GameCube only came out in May 17th in Australia.
I swear it was longer than that. But anyway. Yeah, so that's why I bought a US Wii, because, you know, I'd have to wait a week or so for a game to arrive, but it was better than waiting months. And I didn't do the same with my Wii U. I don't really know why, but... I mean, I'm kind of happy I don't, because it's easier for me to just go buy a game.
I mean, that's the one thing I miss out on with a US 3DS, is that I miss out on the chance to be able to just buy a game in store, or just, you know, if I, like, impulse buy a game, or, yeah, I have to either order stuff online, or
go eShop. I mean, let's just unpack the wider statement. Like, did he say anything else besides rating systems in that statement?
I think, did he mention something about, sort of, different areas value differently? Could that be alluding to, you know, you pay $60 for a game in Australia versus, you know, $40 in America, and money is a thing that Nintendo like?
Well, he said that he hopes people realise that this isn't just done out of business, which would be alluding to people think they're doing it just for money.
But, I mean, isn't that the point? So that they have, like, a more accurate sales figures for each region or something, or...
Yeah. The other rumour I heard was that it was more pressure from the third parties, but then if that's the case, why does anyone else do it?
Well, if the other two have managed to get region
free... Look at the Vita. Vita's completely region free.
Yeah, that hardly had the massive third-party support, but still managed.
But so is PS3.
See, and look that's what I love about my Vita. I can buy games from EB, what little games there are for it. Epic Mickey 2 came out for it recently.
I can't believe they bothered.
What was the first game you guys imported?
First one I can remember would be Brawl.
Resi 4?
I think sort of on that note, region locking, as much as, you know, they keep things to each region, it means that the people that really want to get a game, and if there's a massive delay, they'll find a way around it. It might not be, basically for me, say with Brawl, it was importing it from the US and getting a freeloader to get around the region lock. It's like,
was there a freeloader for Wii?
Yeah. I got that ages before it came out here.
I mean, there was the freeloader, and then that came out roughly around the same time as Brawl, and then like 2 weeks later, here's an update to your Wii that blocks your freeloader.
Oh, actually, I just noticed on my shelf I have one, and it says for Nintendo Wii, so I must not have realised.
They do exist, James.
I think it works on the GameCube as well. I think that's why I bought it.
First game I imported was Electroplankton.
Oh.
Of all things.
Disappointing.
Well, because, you know, I honestly didn't think that was coming out here, and it came with the awesome headphones in Japan.
It did come out here eventually, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Did it?
I'm pretty sure. I swear I've seen it around.
We got the DSiWare releases for it, but I don't think we...
I've seen copies in a shop.
But were they Australian or American?
Seen imported copies that have been traded.
I mean, I think region locking, as I said before, I understand why they do it, but then I also think, like, maybe, I have a feeling they might sell more consoles if they were region free. Yeah. Like, there would be less people buying American consoles to buy American games, you know what I mean?
So, why would you buy an American console if you could just go down to EB and buy one and play any region game on it?
This is probably, even if the 3DS was region free, I probably still would have got an American one, just because it means, I mean, look, I'm fine with the digital stores being region locked. That sort of makes sense.
does no, it doesn't really. Really.
I feel
how it does that make sense? How could you be against region locking, but then you want to region lock the digital store?
Because
they don't even have to distribute it.
Yeah, it's...
But that more so comes a lot more down to ratings, I guess. I mean,
so like... you don't agree with their like reasoning for physical region locks, but you think that it applies fine to digital region locks?
Well, because your system will connect to your store, a store that's set up in your area, like your digital store. I don't know. I'm trying
to... I think for digital, maybe a thing that makes it seem more okay is that, well, every single digital store does it. I can't think of a digital game store like a Steam or an XBLA or any of
Heck,
them.
Even iOS does it. Free. Like, even yeah, iOS is region
they
locked.
All have specific region stores. So maybe you think physical is less okay because no one else does it, but everyone does it for digital. I don't know. I'm trying to reason your mind.
Why can't they just be region free?
I'm not going to go buy a US 3DS for it, but it would be pretty cool if I could buy games anywhere. That's pretty much my opinion.
Yeah, that's me. That me too, I guess. Like, I mean, if I were to go traveling, it would be really nice to be able to pick up a game without having to worry about anything. Mm. And but you kind of have that with movies too now. Like, even some Blu-rays are region locked.
Well, DVDs have been region locked for ages.
Yeah, but you can get around that here.
Oh, you can't get around Blu-rays?
As far as I'm aware, you can't. I haven't looked into it. But because the only Blu-ray player I've got is a PS3, and legally, that's not a Blu-ray player. So there's no.
Doesn't have to have the region unlock like DVD players do.
But I haven't actually looked into it for dedicated Blu-ray players. I'm sure if the laws state that, then they can do it here. You can unlock them here, but I'm not sure.
I know that there's a lot fewer regions for Blu-ray.
Yeah, there's three. So, like, you know, we're the same as the UK.
As opposed to, like, six for... Yeah.
I think. And some other strange places. I haven't read up on it, but...
Video games.
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, I mean, region locking is... It's still happening. I really wish it wasn't happening, because I could buy something anywhere, but... Because it doesn't affect me heaps, I can't get too passionate about it at the moment, and I hope that everyone who disagrees with me doesn't hate me for saying that.
If you are passionate about it, there's an article on the site that mentions a few ways that you can make yourself heard to Nintendo.
Yes, and like, yeah, and I have signed the petition and stuff and done and tweeted and shit, so like, I mean, I think it should still happen, so I have helped, I've contributed, so don't think I'm just sitting here doing nothing and complaining about.
Send your hat mail to James.
Yeah, don't send me, like, anthrax-laced letters. But, like, I do agree with it. So, I do hope it happens. So, maybe Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo, I don't think they will, but hopefully they'll listen.
Well, do you think they'd be able to do a simple firmware update?
Apparently that's all it is that's blocking you from playing your games.
Because I'm sure, I mean, we don't like to talk about it. People have been trying to hack the 3DS, and apparently they did have a flash card out.
Yeah, but
it.
That wasn't even for multiple region. That was just for backups.
Yeah,
It was.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
But that's the thing. Oh, okay. I think that's the other thing, just quickly, that we should say about region locking is that, you know, it kind of gives incentive for people to develop homebrew. And then, while homebrew is good for, you know, indie stuff, and which so many people claim to be using it for, which I don't agree.
The sole reason I homebrewed my Wii was so it could be region-free.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly the same with me. Like, the moment they broke the freeload, I had to homebrew.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the same for me. That's why I did it. But I think that, you know, if you're opening yourself up to that scrutiny from the people who make homebrew stuff, you're also going to be opening up to the kind of stuff like piracy, and you don't want that, really, do you?
Especially with Nintendo, them selling old, you know, old Super Nintendo games that are so easy to emulate on anything, you'd really want to not give it people any incentive to open up their machine to do that stuff without paying for it.
Yeah, I think we're talking about region locking for quite a bit. You know, if you have opinions on it, you know, I'll try and I'll get a topic up about it, and we can try and have a discussion about it. So come join us on the forums, and we'll talk about region locking and stuff. So. I mean, I think we'll all agree, so it might not be a very conducive discussion, but we can try.
We can all agree with each other.
So yeah, we will be back after a very short break, and we'll wrap this all up. End of another podcast for the fortnight, and we'll just quickly go over the stuff that's going on the site right now. Don't forget that we are actually a site as well, if you do listen to us on iTunes and stuff. The address is www.vooks.net. It's like books, but with a V. At the moment, the latest reviews that we've put up is Wii U DLC review for New Super Luigi U. I reviewed it. I really liked it. I think that it was quite good, but I'm still... No, it wasn't perfect, but it was good. So I think Nintendo are doing DLC right. On top of that, we also have a review for Bugs vs. Tax, which is also an eShop release. It's the second game in the Guild 2 series, which is the first game, I think, was Starship Damry, which I reviewed.
Yep. The next one is The Monsters Come on Friday or something, which is quite incredible.
Oh, right. So, yeah, we've got a review for that up already. On top of that, by the time this goes up, hopefully someone would have read through my Game & Wario review, which is quite exhaustive, as well as LEGO Legends of Chima, which is a new LEGO game that it's, to give you a quick glimpse at it, I mean, it's a LEGO game at heart, but it's actually much better than previous LEGO games, and I think the team is starting to really improve themselves.
Especially with their 3D tech, because, I mean, LEGO City Undercover on the DS, or the 3DS was a bit...
Yeah, no, those problems are still there. But, I mean, there's hardly any reviews online of this game, so I think we might have maybe the first, not the first, we'll probably have the second or third review ever up for it, so that's something to look forward to, I guess. Yeah, that's all we've got for reviews. You know, you can see the latest digital update for all the stuff that came out last week on the eShop. We put that up every Thursday or Friday, I believe. Is there anything else going on the site that I've missed, guys?
Always Animal Crossing people wanting to do things.
Yes, if you play Animal Crossing like almost everyone else on the planet, be sure to stop by the forums and have a chat with us. We are always offering up our turnip prices. And yes.
If you say you listen to the podcast, I'll probably let you visit my
village. Yes, that's very nice of you, Stephen. So beneficial. So, what's the word? Benevolent.
That's me.
So nice. So we're all pretty much hankering to go and buy some turnips right now because it is turnip day today, which is every Sunday. So yeah, be sure to check the forum and participate in the community because we're pretty nice, I think, and we don't bite too much.
And we've got a few big episodes coming up soon. Like, I think not next one after should be Pikmin 3 talk.
I've actually got the calendar on my wall. That's how dedicated I am to this. So the next podcast will probably be talking about Mario and Luigi 3, and then the week after we'll be talking about Pikmin, no doubt. So, yeah, we will thank you for listening this time, and hopefully we'll see you again in a fortnight. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.